Nehemiah chapter 2. Boy, one of the things about living in the desert is you know you don't want to go to hell. It just confirms the fact that I'm not going there, man. Whoa. Nehemiah chapter 2. This morning, we focused on the kind of person that God uses out of chapter 1. Tonight, we're going to resume that theme and examine four more qualities that we must have in order to be used by God. Nehemiah possessed these qualities, characteristics, and if we follow his example, Nehemiah's example, God will use us too. I don't want to review this morning, but just, you know, take those four and how we develop those. And, you know, if you want to be used by God, we discovered or kind of gave a working definition of leadership. Leadership, I believe, in the Christian community is when you're willing to give your time and energy to serve God and help others. That's leadership. Leadership in the body of Christ is not an over-under type of thing. It is a foundation that we are there for people to walk on and to use. And that's what we're called to do, man. Not to lord it over people. That's the mentality of the world. The mentality of the church is to serve and to give. So we gave four qualities this morning. We'll mention them again in a little while. But let's just pick it up from there and we'll just continue on. God uses people who are willing to wait. Chapter 1 began with Nehemiah saying, in the month of Chislev, which is December, chapter 2 begins with Nehemiah saying, in the month of Nisan, which is the month of April. Notice there is a lapse of about 4 months. When Nehemiah heard the bad news about the conditions in Jerusalem, he cried, he prayed, he fasted. He said to God, use me, send me to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. Then what happened? Absolutely nothing, at least not immediately. But Nehemiah didn't lose hope. He didn't give up his dream. Instead, he waited. It is often, more often than not, necessary for us to wait on God's timing. For 40 years, Joshua served in obscurity as Moses' assistant. He didn't attract a great deal of attention to himself, but when Moses died, Joshua was ready to lead the Israelites into the promised land. His time has come. He waited 40 years, and he was prepared. Psalm 27:14 says, wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. We as Americans hate to wait for anything or anybody, don't we? We want what we want when we want it. That's it. We want everything instantaneous. So we eat fast food junk just because it's fast. And we're angry if we pull into a fast food outlet and there are two cars in front of us. Oh, man, I got to get... And what are you in a hurry for? Nothing. You have no place to go. But you have to get in. Isn't that true? We have an instantaneous mentality. It has to be quick. We have to do it now. Even if, you know, just boom. We just have to get there. I mean, computers tell that. We keep speeding them up, don't we? Now think about the computer you used to use 5 years ago. You wouldn't touch that today. It is so slow. Am I right? We got to get rid of our dial-up and we have to go to DSL or Roadrunner or something because, man, it takes 2 minutes to dial up. And I don't have 2 minutes to waste. Why not? I don't know. But we want everything and we want it fast. We want it now. Everything is instant. Instant food. And it all is terrible. You know? The stuff that tastes good is the stuff that takes time to cook. But we don't want that. We have the instant potatoes, and we have the instant this and the instant that, and it stinks. But, you know, that's what we have to have. We even pray prayers like, God, I want patience and give it to me now. Okay. Makes absolutely no sense, but that's just kind of our mentality, man. There have been several times, you know, pastoring here since 1973. And so there have been several times when new people have come to this church and after a couple of visits have offered to be a leader. They'll say things like, Pastor Chuck, it looks like you need help. It's obvious, okay? And they say things like, I'll lead a Bible study. I play the guitar and sing. I'll lead worship for you. I'm a great pianist and I can just lead people before the throne of God. And I'll lead worship for you, no problem. You know what? I'd be glad to take over the youth ministry. I could handle that. Not a problem. I'm always glad when people want to serve. So my response is usually in those cases, I appreciate your willingness, pal. Why don't we give it a little more time than a week and a half that you've been coming? So we can get to know you. You can get to know us a little bit more. Then you'll be able to find an area of ministry that is right for you, and we'll be happy to give you the opportunity. Just spend a few months with us and let's interact and get involved a little bit. We can get to know each other. You can guess what usually happens. We never see them again, man, because they want to be doing it now. The inability to wait indicates a lack of spiritual and emotional maturity. God cannot use anybody who insists on running before they're able to crawl. If anybody wants to be used by God, he or she must be willing to wait. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. We must learn to wait upon God. And as we wait upon him, he will strengthen us. And how many people over the years who've not waited, when it's time for God to use them and he's ready to just explode ministry in their lives and I go looking for them, they're gone. Because they just couldn't wait. They couldn't wait for what God wanted to do. Secondly, God uses people with a positive attitude. Look at verse 2 of chapter 2. Therefore the king said to me, why is your face sad since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart. So I became dreadfully afraid. At this point, Nehemiah had been heartbroken about his homeland for 4 months. But up to this point, he didn't let it show. Instead, he continued to serve the king with a pleasant disposition. Negative people don't serve very well. If you desire for God to use your life, then you must be ready to serve God joyfully, even when you're experiencing personal trials. That doesn't mean you're phony, but you know what? The things we've gone through, there are good times, there are bad times, there are happy times, there are sad times. But you know what? In the close to 40 years that I've known Jesus Christ, even though there's been good times and bad times and happy times and sad times, the joy that I received the night that I walked down the aisle and knelt on an altar in a Pentecostal church in Pico Rivera, California, and gave my life to Jesus Christ, the joy that I received that night has never left. I've had pain. I've had disappointment. I've had heartache, but the joy has always been there for almost those 40 years, man. Because the joy has absolutely nothing to do with my circumstances. Happiness has to do with my circumstances. I can be happy, I can be up, I can be sad, I can be down. But my happiness is dictated to a lot by what's going on in my life. Do you understand what I mean? Good stuff's going on. Yeah, I'm happy. It's cool, you know. Bad stuff's going on. I'm unhappy. But there's a joy. There's a joy inside there that is just, you can't put it out. It's just there. The Bible calls it joy unspeakable. That means we don't have the vocabulary to be able to verbalize the joy that we experience knowing Jesus Christ. Anybody know what I'm talking about? You know, your life can be just going down the tubes, man. It can be in the pits, but there's a joy. And people think you're nuts, don't they? What's your trip? What are you smoking, man? You know, what's going on? It's just Jesus. Well, you work for the same boss I work for, and he's a jerk. We're not talking about my staff. Okay. All right. We're talking about your job. Knock it off. Oh, easy. Right. You're working for the same creepy boss I'm working for, and there's a joy in your life, and I'm thinking of the joys of homicide. You know? I'm ready to take the guy out, and you have a joy, man. What's your story? Well, my story is there's a joy that's not a part or has anything to do with my circumstances. It has to do with the fact that I have been redeemed from the pit and my feet have been placed on the solid rock, Christ Jesus. And I know him, he knows me, we fellowship together, and one day I'm going to take off of this planet and I'm going to see him face to face, and there's a joy because of that. Two of us have this joy. The rest of you, I'm concerned. Of three, you're okay? Anybody else? Do I hear four? Four, there's, do I hear five? There's six. But it's a joy that you can't verbalize, you can't explain. And then that joy becomes your strength. The joy of the Lord is my strength. My strength is because I know God through Jesus Christ. I am secure in him. And because of that security, there is strength to walk this Christian walk. It has nothing to do with my disappointments or my letdowns or my failures or the bumps in the road. It has nothing to do with that. His joy is my strength. So I can walk through the trials of life. I can walk through the storms of life because of God's joy. We see in this story that Nehemiah was, for the most part, a positive person. He wasn't a Pollyanna. Eventually, the king recognized Nehemiah's sadness. This brings us to our third point, our third characteristic of a person that God uses. God uses people who communicate sincerity. So the king asked me, we already read it, why is your face sad since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart. So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire? In those days, if a servant displayed negative emotions in the presence of the king, he was putting himself in grave danger. It was common for slaves to be put to death for even appearing to be dissatisfied with the king. That's why Nehemiah said, I was very much afraid. He knew he was taking the chance of offending his king by being more concerned with his homeland than he was for Babylon. See, every king wanted a happy kingdom. And so you would never enter the presence of a king with a sad countenance, a sad face, because that was an affront to the king, and that was a statement that your rulership makes me unhappy. I'm not happy in your kingdom. So you did, when you walked into the presence of the king, how are you doing? Great. kind of like most of us do when we walk into church, when we're, you know, because we don't want anybody to think we're not real spiritual. How you doing? Great. I'm so good, you know, things are wonderful. And they would put on this phony, you know, smile, and we do that a lot in church too, don't we? How you doing, bro? I'm doing great. God bless you. How you doing? You know, your life's falling apart. We need to learn to be honest. Speak with sincerity. That's what Nehemiah is doing. But notice that once the king detected Nehemiah's sadness, Nehemiah didn't play games with the king. He didn't pretend there was nothing wrong. He didn't blame his sadness on something else. He spoke honestly and directly and with sincerity. Listen, if you want to be used, you must be willing to communicate your feelings to others. You must be willing to communicate your feelings to those that lead and those that follow. I realize I said we must have a positive attitude, but there is a balance to be achieved here. We cannot conceal our emotions. We do not pout. We do not play the role of a martyr. How you doing, bro? I'm doing fine. Don't worry about me. I'll be all right, I suppose. Go on with your life, bro. I'll probably make it through. God bless you. May see you next week. I'm not sure. You know. That's not what I'm saying, man. We must communicate our feelings with honesty and sincerity. If you're not doing okay, tell somebody. It's okay. You don't have to go into a 20-minute dissertation because they'll walk off. When you see them start looking other places, yawning, falling asleep, you know you've probably talked a little bit too long, man. But if you have a need and you're not doing good and somebody says, how you doing, sis? We're conditioned to say, fine, thank you, how you doing? Well, that's not sincere. If it's not true, saying, you know, thanks for asking, but I have a couple of problems here, and could you pray with me? I don't mean to bring attention to yourself, but man, isn't that what the body's all about? That we should meet each other's needs? Talked about it this morning. Minister to each other? That's what the church is all about, man. Fourthly, God uses people who have a plan. Nehemiah explained to the king, his sadness came because of the conditions in Jerusalem. Pick it up at verse 4. Then the king said to me, what do you request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said to the king, if it please the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. Then the king said to me, the queen also sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. I thought about that, and I thought, how was Nehemiah able to set a time? How did he know how long it would take? I think it was because of the last 4 months. In addition to praying and fasting, he had also been planning. Nehemiah was so certain God wanted him to go to Jerusalem that he already made plans. So when his moment of opportunity came, he was prepared. Look at verse 7. Furthermore, I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the region beyond the river, that they must permit me to pass through till I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he must give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which pertains to the temple, for the city wall, and for the house that I will occupy. And the king granted them to me according to the good hand of my God upon me. It's very clear. Think about this. It is very clear that Nehemiah had done his homework. He even knew the name of the man who was in charge of the king's lumber yard. Now, what would have happened if Nehemiah had not been prepared or didn't have a plan? The king probably wouldn't have given him permission to go. Nehemiah had prayed about what he wanted to do, but he also made plans. Imagine going to the bank to borrow money for a house. And the banker says, how much do you want to borrow? And you respond by saying, I don't know, how much do you have? Okay. Then the banker says, what do you want to use the money for? You respond by saying, I haven't decided on anything really specific yet. And then he says, how do you plan on repaying this loan? And you respond by saying, I figure I'll come up with the money somehow. What do you think your chances would be of walking out of the bank with a loan? In fact, what do you think your chances would be of walking out of the bank because they would probably throw you out? Am I right? Why then do we expect God to use us when we're not being prepared to be used? No matter what it is that you want to accomplish in life, whether it's to buy a house, be a bodybuilder, go on a vacation, make money, get married, serve God, or rebuild a wall, you have to have a plan. God used, you know, I was just thinking about the bodybuilding thing, and I have no idea why I brought that up. Okay. I guess I'm saying I am a prime example. If you don't have a plan of being a bodybuilder, it ain't going to work. Because I've read the magazines. I drive by the gyms. Okay. I have memberships in all of them. Keep renewing them every year. That doesn't work. You have to devise a plan. You have to go. Oh. You have to work out. You have to do something for it to have results. Anybody want to buy a membership? God used Nehemiah because Nehemiah positioned himself to be used by God. He was willing to do what it takes. Now here's the qualities we've examined in the first two chapters. Most importantly, Nehemiah was spiritually adept enough to say in verse 8, and because the gracious hand of God was upon me, the king granted my requests. Nehemiah gave God the credit and the glory. He didn't say, the king granted my requests because I was sincere. He didn't say the king granted my requests because I was prepared. He didn't say the king granted my request because I was willing to wait and so on. He realized that it was by God's hand upon his life that gave him the opportunity to do this great work. We've looked at 8 characteristics of the kind of person God uses. Let me review them. Let me just say them. I won't review them. Let me say them again real quick. God is looking for those who are, number one, trustworthy. This is in chapter 1. Compassionate. Committed to prayer. Number 4, willing to work. So this morning it was trustworthy, compassionate, committed to prayer, and ready to work. And then tonight it's willing to wait, positive, sincere, and able to devise a plan. And there is one characteristic that encompasses all of these. God uses the kind of person who is willing to work for God's glory, not their own. Did you hear me? God will use the kind of person who is willing to work for God's glory and not their own. In our story, Nehemiah has arrived in Jerusalem with the intention of rebuilding the wall around the city. He's taking all the necessary steps to get the project underway. Before he can get started, though, he must first face the other side of glory and deal with 3 aspects of leadership that are often overlooked. First of all, Nehemiah, we got just 3 more things here. Just kind of taking a little turn. Now this is opposition, aspects. Number 1, Nehemiah had to face isolation. Look at verse 13. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well and the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire. For months, Nehemiah had dreamt about returning to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls of the city. When he finally received permission from King Artaxerxes, he began the four-month journey from Babylon to Jerusalem. It took him 4 months to get there. He didn't storm Jerusalem with a band of mighty men. He entered the city quietly and all alone. He told no one of his plans. After a few days, he went out under the cover of darkness to inspect the walls. He began to realize this is no longer a dream. Reality began to sink in. Nehemiah knew that he faced a tremendous challenge. The city of Jerusalem had been destroyed. Nothing remained but piles and piles of rubble. And while the city slept, a fire burned within Nehemiah to restore the glory of the great city. If you want to be used by God because you like the spotlight, you might want to reconsider your ambitions, because the spotlight is a very small percentage of the job. Second obstacle. Nehemiah had to face motivation. People who are able to motivate other people have tremendous influence and power. Politicians who know how to motivate others get elected. Ministers who know and pastors who know how to motivate others build large churches. Businessmen who know how to motivate others become millionaires. But the real test is the ability to motivate others. It's when we face a situation where there is no momentum, where the crowds are small and enthusiastic, and there is much work to be done. Several years ago, Barry Alvarez left Notre Dame to accept an offer as head coach of the University of Wisconsin football team. His friends thought he was crazy to take this job. The Badgers had a deep-seated losing tradition. The program was millions of dollars in debt. There was practically no booster club or alumni support, and the school had never been able to recruit any decent players. But Barry believed he could turn it around. In spite of these limited resources, he was able to inspire the players to play beyond themselves. He kept them motivated, even though they continued to lose at first. And little by little, the team picked up momentum. 4 years later, those seniors who played for Barry as freshmen, played for him for 4 years, led their team to the Rose Bowl, and they won. Barry Alvarez was like Nehemiah. Nehemiah was able to start with nothing but rubble, no support, no momentum, and motivate scores of people to get involved. How did he do it? Well, Nehemiah was able to motivate others because, number one, he was self-motivated. He was self-motivated. Nehemiah didn't choose to rebuild the wall because he simply thought it was a project he might enjoy. This man was consumed. He was absolutely obsessed with the idea. It was all he thought about, day and night. And his enthusiasm swept everyone off their feet. Sloan Wilson said, "Success in almost any field depends more on energy and drive than it does intelligence." And he goes on to say, that explains why we have so many stupid leaders. Did you hear the statement? He said, success in almost any field depends more on energy and drive than it does intelligence. That's why we have so many stupid leaders. I like that. You don't have to be a genius, but you do have to be consumed with a vision to be used by God. That's how you motivate others to join you. They catch your vision. It's contagious. So first of all, he was able to motivate others because he was self-motivated. Secondly, he was able to motivate others because he was focused on the big picture. Notice what he said in verse 17. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. Nehemiah wanted the people to know they weren't just building a wall. They were restoring the city of God. It's more than just bricks and mortar. It was the glory of Israel. In the same way, we need to be able to look beyond the mundane details of our jobs and see the big picture. Sunday school teachers aren't just babysitting, they're building lives. Church musicians, worship leaders, whatever you want to call them, aren't just playing chords, they're helping people entering into the presence of God. Nehemiah was able to motivate others because he focused on the big picture. And thirdly, Nehemiah was able to motivate others because he had credibility. When a politician runs for office, when an individual applies for a job, when a salesman makes a call, the first thing he must do is establish credibility. People are going to ask, why should we listen to you? Why should we buy from you? Why should we believe what you say? Nehemiah didn't have an impressive resume in the field of labor management, construction, public relations. In fact, he had only two things going for him, and he used them both to establish his credibility. He said in verse 18, I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me and what the king had said to me. If you want to be used, people have to be able to sense God's presence in your life. Otherwise, why would they follow you? We don't have to be perfect. We have to be credible. How else will they be able to inspire others to give beyond themselves? The ability to start with nothing and motivate others to greatness is an aspect that is often overlooked because it exists on the other side of glory. But there's a third aspect that Nehemiah must deal with. It's Nehemiah had to face opposition. I don't like this one. Look at verse 19. But when Sanballat, the Horonite, Tobiah, the Ammonite official, and Geshem, the Arab, heard of it, they laughed at us and despised us and said, what is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against the king? So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore, we as servants will arise and build, but you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem. See, after Nehemiah had inspected the damage, formulated his plans, recruited a group of people to help him begin this project, the inevitable happened. Anytime somebody, attempts to do something great for God, they must endure opposition. There will always be those who criticize rather than do anything worthwhile themselves. When this church first started, back in the early 70s, the idea of a casual, non-traditional church was still a radical concept. There weren't many churches like it in existence. On many occasions, sincere Christian people told me flatly, your idea will never work. They said, you cannot have a church full of young people. Who's going to pay the bills? I don't know. They'd ask me things like that. They would say your informal governmental structure will never work. You have to have a solid church board. You have to establish rules and bylaws. You must have businessmen who will control everything. They would say, you can't start a church because you don't have a Sunday school. You don't have Sunday school teachers. You don't have choirs. You don't have a sanctuary. We met in theaters. We met in old bank buildings. We met in campfire girls buildings. You know, we met in the park. You can't do that. And you can't create an atmosphere of worship wearing jeans and playing guitars. And my worship, everything else has changed except my worship leaders. They still, most of them, wear Levi's and play guitars. And he said, you can't do that. It won't work. Honest, truthfully, we had one guy that came to me. He was a wealthy man who owned several hotels in Desert Hot Springs. And he started coming to our church and, you know, my thing's ringing here. Oh, God's sending people are going to pay the bills. And he came to me after a couple of months of coming to church. He says, Chuck, I can't come back to this church. Why not? Because the odor of rubber is offensive to me. Huh? I'm sorry about that, but maybe you didn't hear my question. I asked why you can't come back to this church. He says, because rubber makes me ill. Okay. What are you saying? He's saying, everybody in your church wears thongs. And you get a room full of people with thongs and the rubber smell is just, I can't take it, so I can't come back. Okay. You want me to get up next Sunday morning and tell people they can't wear their thongs anymore? So he left. But I had all of this criticism, all of these things. It won't work. It won't work. I was sitting at a restaurant one day having a Coke with some people. And in the next booth were a group of people. And they didn't know who I was. And they were talking about church because at that time things were happening in our little church. And God was blessing. And a bunch of, you know, people were coming. And it was people that no other church would accept or whatever. It was weird. Most of them just had names, nicknames. I never knew any of their names. You know, there was Stuttering Don. And there was Pack Rat. And there were all... I knew... Someday I'll tell you why they called him Pack Rat, okay? Went in one day and all of our sound equipment was gone, but there was a can of tuna there. That's what a Pack Rat does. Take something, exchange it for something else. Wasn't a fair deal. But all these people were out of the mountains, out of the hills, out of Tockwitz Canyon, you know, out of that kind of stuff. And I was sitting in this restaurant. You remember all that stuff. You know, Rex and all of those days. And man, I was sitting in this restaurant. I heard this couple talking about our church. And this other couple had said something about, I think I'm going to go check out that church over there on downtown Palm Springs and see what's happening because they seem to be active. I see them on the streets all the time handing out tracts and singing and you doing all this stuff. And, you know, I'm going to go check them out. And the other guy said, don't go there. That's just a church filled with losers. That's a place. All the losers go there. I'm beginning to get a little hot, you know. I'm going to get up and I'm going to hurt him. Because I believe in divine healing. Okay, you know, take him out and then pray for God to raise him up. It didn't make any difference. I was younger then, okay. And I was a little upset, man. And all of a sudden, God just began to speak to my heart and say, listen to me, son, that's a compliment. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. I am sending to you losers. I am sending to you the hurting and the maimed. I'm sending to you the scarred. I'm sending you those that won't be accepted anyplace else. So we finished our Coke and got up to leave. And I was going to be gracious. And I was just going to walk out. I couldn't. You know? I turned around, I walked back, and I said, excuse me, I overheard your conversation, and I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Chuck Willie from the church you've been talking about, and I just want to tell you that if you're running any losers or any lowlife, would you send them over? Because we really want to minister to them. God bless you. I am told that the most beautiful vegetation, the most beautiful flowers bloom when you cover over a dump, and the most beautiful flowers grow in that type of environment. And God has been doing that. I'm not offending any of you. I'm just telling you, He still sends us, because I'm the chief of all losers. And we just need to be a place that will accept. See, there are losers, there are the down and outs, and there are the up and outs. Losers don't have to be on the street. Losers can be behind the gates at Country Club. Am I right? Because you can be down and out or up and out. Either way, you're out. And you need to come to Jesus Christ. But there's always going to be those who criticize. There's always going to be those when you want to do something for God. And it's happened for 30 years. Every time we're going to do it. I can't tell you the amount of people that are talking to me about the property we bought and our plans and so forth. And, you know, oh, Pastor Chuck. Whoa, you're getting over your head. Good. When I'm over my head, Jesus has to do something. What are you going to do to pay for it? I don't know. It's my father's problem. Isn't it, Dad? No, the other father. It's the other father's problem. Okay? He'll take care of it. And they're telling me, are you absolutely certain that's where you ought to buy? I don't know. Think so? Well, what if you're wrong? God will open up the earth. I'll be sucked in. And you'll never see me again. Because God's that kind of God. That if you make a mistake, He'll kill you. Now, is that right? Of course not. If I'm wrong, if it's the wrong property, God'll do something else. God'll fix it. God'll make it work out. But every time you attempt to do anything for God, you're going to teach a Sunday school class. Some of you volunteered to be involved in VBS this week, and you probably got flack for it already. Your husband or your wife said, or your kids or somebody said, you? You're going to work with kids? You hate kids. Yeah, but God's going to use me, man. Okay. Every time you decide to do something for God, there's going to be criticism, man. There's going to be opposition. There will always be those, for some reason, who feel it's their duty to oppose any new idea. It's just their duty. That's why God put them on this planet. When somebody is going to do something for God, it's their duty to say, I don't think you ought to. Do you really think you ought to do that? Yeah. Nehemiah didn't argue with them. He just said, I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. If we're supposed to build and move, the God of heaven will take care of it. He'll give us success. Don't have to worry about it. If you want to be used, you're going to be criticized. People will question your motives. They'll challenge you. They'll denounce your ideas. They'll even try to sabotage your effort, sabotage your effort, whatever. They'll try to mess it up. In the Greek, that word means, I don't know what it means. But it shouldn't be that way. But it is. Every significant person in Scripture, from Moses to Paul, faced opposition. Throughout history, every person who has aspired to greatness has first had to endure the criticism of others. It is no different today. Who is it? Spurgeon. In his biography, says that when he would come down after teaching, one of the greats you know, expositors and teachers and Bible expositors of the last, you know, 100 years, man, said that when he would come down after teaching and meet with his wife, that she would do nothing but criticize and nag and put him down for everything he just said and everything that he was. And that happened his entire life. It's hard to believe that a great man like Abraham Lincoln would have enemies, but he did. And they were just people from the South. Lincoln was criticized and ridiculed by Northerners and even by his colleagues. It's hard to believe that Winston Churchill, after leading England during World War II, saw his popularity decrease and was eventually voted out of office. We must believe strongly in what we're doing because opposition is inevitable. But the important thing is, God wants to use each and every one of us. He desires to use you. But I have no abilities. What have we said for years? The only ability God desires from you and needs from you is availability. He creates talents. He gives, he takes. He just wants vessels to be used. If you want to be great in God's kingdom, learn to be a servant of all. That's what it's all about. So I just wanted to prepare you as you begin reading this week in the book of Nehemiah, what you're going to see. You're going to see the opposition. You're going to see these, you're going to see Sanballat and Geshem and Tobiah. You're going to see these guys confronting Nehemiah, and you're going to see them trying to all kinds of devices, all kinds of ways to get him distracted. You're going to see those ways this week. And as you do that, you're going to see exactly the same ways that the enemy uses to distract you when you're involved in the things of God. They'll come to him one day and say, "Let's talk. Let's talk. We'll meet you in the Valley of Ono." And Nehemiah says, "Oh no. Oh no, not going to Ono, man." Then they say, "Okay, you're going to build these walls, even the vermins. Little mousy will run on the wall. It's going to fall down. You're so inept at what you're doing." All of these things you're going to read about, man. And Nehemiah just kept his focus on the things that God had called him to do. And he ultimately built the wall, man. Keep your focus on Jesus Christ and his call in your life. And ultimately, you will accomplish God's purpose in your life. Well, you look finished, so I'm done. Let's stand, okay? Jesus, my prayer is that this week, as this church would be reading the book of Nehemiah, that each one of us would learn the truths about being used by you. We would see in his life, his example. We would see through the circumstances and through the confrontations and all that he does, Lord, as we see his prayer times, as we see his him being challenged, as we see him creating unity amongst the workers, Lord, as he does all of these things, we would learn that we too could be mightily used by you. Oh, bless you, sweet Jesus. We commit our lives to you fresh tonight. We want to be used. We want to walk in obedience. Forgive us our selfishness. Forgive us our self-centeredness. Just forgive us, Lord. We want to be used by you. Hallelujah. Teach us the things that you want us to know, Jesus, as we submit our lives to you.